All right, it looks like folks are getting joined. You all are, as usual, very prompt. I've been impressed with everybody's promptness today. So thank you all for being early. And we will probably wait another minute or so before getting started, just in case folks are coming from other sessions that are still wrapping up. Rich, I just realized you're inside the Alex lobby, and until last night, my Zoom background was outside of the Alex office, but I changed it to Spokane for today because I think a lot of people were really looking forward to visiting Spokane, and I was one of those people. Folks, feel free to use the chat and say hello. Let us know where you are Zooming from today. Some of you might be having lunch. Some of you, maybe it's breakfast. I know we have some folks from Hawaii. We've got Michelle from Salt Lake City, upstate New York, Virginia, all across the map. My friend John from Africa. Hey, John. Now, folks, I know there's a chat and a Q&A option. My suggestion is just use the chat. That way everyone can see the question and it's more like a discussion. If you do want to just send a note to Rich and I, you can also use the panelists option in the dropdown. But if you want to say something to everyone, just make sure that you're sending it to all panelists and attendees. Oh, looks like we've actually got somebody who's in Spokane. We've got some boots on the ground. All right, I think we'll go ahead and get started, Rich. It's about 1 minute after the hour. We might have some folks pop on. But thank you all so much for joining us today for Enmatic. I know some of you have been with us. This is session number 4, maybe 5. I'm losing track, but it's all good stuff. My name's Emily. Some of you may have seen me on the keynote or any other sessions, so I will not belabor my introduction. And instead, I will turn it right over to Rich Colasa, who is the Senior Director of Strategic Partnerships here at McGraw-Hill Alex. And he's going to be talking about learning loss and how you can boost college readiness. And also with a particular focus on, you know, how learning loss has really kind of been exacerbated by a lot of the challenges of the pandemic. But we're also, you know, keeping it positive, right? We're trying to think about the opportunity and kind of what we learned and how we can grow. So I will turn it over to Rich.
Welcome, everybody. Rich Colasa. Many of you, I was looking at the registration list the other day, and I know there's a lot of you that I've interacted with over the past over a decade. I've actually been working in math for over 20 years, so I've got to meet quite a few people around the country. This conversation we'll have today, addressing learning loss and boosting college readiness, is going to focus on many of the things that we're facing today in the pandemic, and also talking about the, when I say the positive things, the proactive things that people are doing to address students who may not be in the classroom as they were in the past, specifically recent college graduates. So I'm just gonna jump in. And again, if you have questions, Emily's gonna be sort of a moderator on the side. If there's questions that pop up, because I'm not going to be looking at the chat while I'm presenting, I'll have Emily jump in and ask those questions. So here are some things addressing learning loss as it relates to math. One of the things that we definitely need to understand today, even more so than we did in the past, was viewing topics in mathematics from both a placement and course design perspective, how we teach courses, how do students enter into courses, the expectations of students coming into courses is not going to be dropped, if someone's entering into a college algebra course or a quantitative reasoning course, but yet their skill base may not be what it was before. And we know that there were issues before when it came to students skipping classes for all different types of reasons. Distinguishing between learning loss versus first-time learning topics, those are two totally different things as we think about how we're teaching classes, but also what we're offering students in regards to bridge programs, intervention programs, things along those lines that can help them get up to speed quicker than they normally would. We want to make sure that we're keeping students on track in their areas of study and degree attainment. It's a big topic of conversation of retention and matriculation. This has become an extremely passionate topic of conversation, not just for our group here, but I know in the math community. That's going to make it more difficult if students do arrive on campus with not the same skills that they had in the past. Current math, one thing we know about students, and this is true, we see this in all the research, the best predictor of a student being successful, being retained and graduating is their success in their first math course. That is a consistent research area that you can find throughout the country, that students being successful in that first math course gets them off onto the right foot, also allows them to move into different pathways, whether they want to go STEM or non-STEM. They're really important areas. Knowing a student's placement affects students well beyond just the placement course. It impacts majors. It impacts the perception sometimes even of themselves, where they may think that they're ready for a particular course when maybe they're not ready for a particular course. So there's a lot of things that addressing students' knowledge, specifically when it comes to learning loss, is going to be very impactful on students. The research on learning loss. I did not include everything that I could have because this is a 45-minute session, and I also want to show you a program that people are using, but I did bring in just a few tidbits on things that we should be thinking about. Learning loss is unique to the time outside of school. All research shows is that even like from high school to college, that gap between May and August, the average student loses about 2.5 months of math knowledge of what they previously learned. So now imagine students being out of the classroom for 6 months, a year, whatever it may be, this is gonna be really magnified. What we're also seeing is that children from under-resourced communities tend to lose approximately 30% of their math knowledge over the summer. So it actually grows even exponentially in certain communities. The learning loss during the COVID school closures is going to be even more severe and unequal. When I say unequal, we're starting to talk about equity of students of having access to materials and those who do not. That could be internet access, computer access. Even the institutions, the schools that they're attending may have different resources than others. And there are some shortcomings that we have found in regards to the quality and the quantity of schooling during the pandemic. This is not pointing fingers that in the academic community that what was going on in the classroom was not working. This is just a fact that people were not prepared in February to say, we're in the classroom and then boom, we're going to go straight online. People weren't prepared for that. And I'm gonna say this fall semester, I have a son that's in third grade. His classroom is different this semester. There was a lot more preparation that was put in this summer. Here are some equity points. I'm not gonna go into all of them, but these are really staggering. If you have a chance to look at this, it was from the Pew Research Center. It talks about students, their access to cell phones, access to public versus their own internet at home, and then the ability to complete their schoolwork at home. And it was really, really interesting. When we think about it from a socioeconomic perspective, students having access that are doing their homework on cell phones, only 10% of students in the upper income bracket were using cell phones. But yet, if we look at the lower bracket, it's down to 43%. That is a big deal. And think about mathematics. Working online sometimes could be difficult for some students, but now imagine a small phone. It makes it even more difficult. Now let's think about it, not just from the economic perspective, but let's look at from the rural, suburban, and urban areas. Doing their homework on cell phones, 33% of students in rural areas and 36% of students in urban areas are doing homework on cell phones. Having to use a public Wi-Fi versus a home internet. In the upper, from a socioeconomic perspective, in the upper income area, it was only 6% versus in the lower income area, someone may be sitting out in front of a Starbucks or a McDonald's. Someone has to get access to public internet. And in the lower socioeconomic areas, it's 40% of students. In rural areas, it's 31%. Again, urban is 30%. We don't talk a lot about the rural communities. And I think we really need to. We need to have a focus on that. When it comes to doing homework, right? Completing their homework if they don't have a computer. And again, the data's very telling. This was just updated yesterday from the National Student Clearinghouse. If you didn't have a chance to review this, it's about equity in enrollments, post-secondary enrollments. I decided to go on and evaluate specifically community colleges since this is AMATIC. Currently right now, across all post-secondary enrollments, it's still down 4%. 9.5% decline in community college enrollments. Now here's the point that we need to start thinking about when we think about equity. 14% decrease in enrollments of Black students at community colleges, 21% of Black males. That's a huge reduction in enrollments at schools. The one that I really found interesting was the 30% decline in community college freshmen, right? So entering freshman enrollments for Black, Hispanic, and Native American. That is a huge number. I look at that as also we see that even in the four-year area, we looked about overall declines in enrollments, it's down 13%. So these numbers are quite high and things that we definitely need to think about as we think about the pandemic and how it's impacted students across all demographics. At this point, I want to give you a demo of a program we have called Alex PPL. And Alex PPL is our placement program. You notice I'm not going to call it an assessment because it is a complete program. It's more than just a placement exam. It's also being used in bridge programs, intervention programs. It's being used in manners for articulations between local high schools and local community colleges. I want to give you a demo of the program, and then I'm going to have this open for a discussion at the end, as I'll describe how some institutions are using this, not only for proper placement, but they're using the PPL program to help in intervention programs to prepare students. So I already have built out a cohort, and I am going to log into the program. I'm not going to go into everything on the development of the program, but I will let you know that it was developed through collaborations of institutions around the country. There are quite a few schools that implement Alex PPL as their placement program around the country at both 2- and 4-year institutions with great success. Now, normally when we implement this in a placement arena, we will have single sign-on. And that would be a single sign-on through your enterprise system at the school. Colleague Banner, PeopleSoft, we would do for my demo. I'm just going to log into the program and get started. One of the nice things about Alex PPL, which stands for Placement Preparation and Learning, is that it's available in 2 languages. It's available in English. We allow the students to choose this. It's also available in Spanish. By clicking a button, be converted into Spanish. Second, it's coming. What I always say about this, and there are discussions of whether this should be turned on or not turned on, is, you know, we're measuring a student's math skills. And if there are interpretation issues, if if Spanish is someone's native language, we do find that there are different outcomes. The assessment itself would be the same. But we want to make sure that students can interpret the equations that they're reading. You'll notice here in the beginning, it outlines what the program is. It's a placement program. It also has prep and learning modules built in, and students can retake their assessments. A survey. This is actually really interesting, especially for today. The survey is an optional piece of our program that allows you to collect more information about the students. It does not impact the students' outcomes or what they're given in regards to the topics or questions within the PPL assessment, but these are just some basic examples. If you want to find out a little bit more about your students, when did you take your last math course? What course was it? And there are numerous courses on here that they can look at. What year was it? So now we're starting to talk about learning loss. And what was their grade? These are just some examples. Again, you can add your own questions in. There are a few community colleges I work with that put in there what high school did you graduate from? And they're doing research with those schools to collect data. Right now, there is a tutorial. We'll walk through the tutorial on how to use the math palette. It is not a multiple choice exam. And using the math palette is actually quite simple. Now, Alex, as a program, goes down to third grade math. And so students are actually pretty proficient. It's interesting, I'm watching my son. He's using math programs online at his school, and he's probably more proficient on walking through these than even I am. And I've been working with Alex for close to 15 years. The graphing utility, this is one of the strengths of the ALEKS program. With a lot of programs, especially online programs, when it comes to graphing, it has you plot a point or interpret a graph. Most of the time, they're multiple choice questions. But with ALEKS, you actually have to graph. And it's one of the pieces that I know faculty really like about our program.
Rich, can I just add a quick note? So the team at ALEKS is aware that, you know, a lot of students, an increasing number of students are using their phones in ALEKS, and has made it kind of an ongoing priority to enhance the mobile experience for ALEKS and that responsive design. Inherently there's going to be a lot of zooming and panning, but the experience has improved and continues to improve for mobile devices.
Mm-hmm. Calculators, the calculator is available where appropriate. Basic math equations like, you know, 1/2 + 1/2 would not have a calculator. With our program, we are assessing across 314 topics from basic arithmetic all the way through trigonometry. And of those 314 topics, the calculator is actually only available in approximately 42 topics. So not all students will receive them, but it's there when appropriate. If you're a school that says it's okay to use a calculator, we can work with you on having it turned on. And if you're a school that says we don't want a calculator, we can turn it off. We're about to get started. You'll notice some of the parameters I have here is I have this set to 3 hours, and I also have it unproctored. I'm letting you know, based on the parameters of setting up the program is what we're going to see here. Our recommendation for people that are implementing this as a placement program is to let the students take the first one at home on their own, unproctored, but don't count it. And then thereafter, let the students come in and take it in a proctored environment, or in today's age, a remote proctored environment. And the reason for that is that it familiarizes the student with the program. It also gets some of their math skills going. And we have seen some great outcomes with that. Some messaging here in the beginning: don't get help from others. Have paper and pencil ready. Maximum of 30 questions. Actual national average is 27 questions. And our national average for completing the assessment is 1 hour and 17 minutes. I have it set to 3 hours again, just for the demo. There is an institutional honor code statement here. I will click it and we'll begin. Now, what I'll tell you is that the first question, if there were 50 students coming in, everyone would receive a different first question. It normally starts off somewhere around intermediate algebra. We don't want students guessing. So if they truly don't understand how to solve an equation, we want them to click, I don't know. I'm gonna show you what happens if, some people will look at some of the questions we have and say, I think this will be too difficult for our students. Or maybe they'll come in and they'll say, hey, this is just way too easy for my students. I'm letting you know that the first two questions, you're either gonna shoot up really fast or you're going to shoot down really fast. But the system adapts very, very fast to how students are answering the equation. I also wanna let you know for the demo, I have a solve button. I also have a skip knowledge check. Students don't have this, it's just for me for today. Again, I know I'm answering this incorrect. I want you to see how we adapt moving down. Within one question, we are down to pre-algebra type topics, arithmetic. I'm gonna click the solve button. I want you to see that we don't just receive a question that's slightly harder than the one that I received. I'll answer another one correctly. And it does, by the way, will accept different iterations of answers within the math template. Alex does have a very high answer tolerance within the program, so it does allow for different iterations of answers. If I click I don't know, it will also move me down. So this is how the system's going to work. It's going to allow me to move up. It will allow me to move down. It's going to pinpoint exactly what my knowledge state is. On the very top, there is a clock on how much time I have remaining, and also allows me to track how fast I'm moving forward through the exam. This is all I'm going to cover right now on the assessment. I think you get the understanding of how we're adapting of moving up and down. I'm gonna skip the knowledge check, but I wanna preface this by saying, students do not see this next screen. I am importing fictitious information into the system. This would be the screen the students would receive after taking their exam. We have cut scores that are used nationally within your courses. These cut scores can be adjusted. They are adjusted. Our implementation team and specialists, we review everyone's course structures, including not just the names of the courses, but the content you're teaching in the courses to make recommendations on those cut scores. We do make adjustments and we collaborate together with every institution on what that would look like. But these are the basic cut scores here. On the right-hand side, students would know exactly where they would be placed. You could put a link to your institution's website if you want more information for the students. Otherwise, the students can click forward. They'll have more information about themselves in regards to what their knowledge state is across the entire spectrum of topics. At this point, the students do have an option. They know they can take four more assessments, but to improve, it's going to recommend that they go into the learning modules. Alex is going to recommend which module you should go into. And there is a setting that only the module that Alex recommends is shown. I like to leave it open because students can choose which one they want to go into, but it still highlights we recommend you go here. These are institutional decisions. And again, our implementation managers would walk through those parameters with you. At this point, the information from the placement exam is loaded into the study plan. And these are the topics that we would be studying. In prep for college algebra, we don't assess or provide learning in college algebra, hence the name prep. The topics go all the way back to real numbers, so back to arithmetic, all the way up through like an algebra 2 or intermediate algebra sequence. It will tell us what we know and what we don't know. The colored area here, the shaded area here, are the topics we know. The grayed out areas is what we still need to learn. The nice thing about Alex, though, is we only present students topics that they're ready to learn at that particular point. I want to mention here on the side, you'll notice that I cannot, this is locked, I cannot take another assessment. And that's because I also put in on my setup that I have a 24-hour cooling off period, but I'm also mandating students study 5 hours. These are all options on your side. You get to dictate what's the cooling off period. Is there going to be mandated time in the study modules? That's completely up to you to decide. I would then start my path. The first topic that comes up, is going to be the topic that I'm most ready to learn. Alex gives me a complete review of this particular topic on how to solve it, including the answers, and then I can start it. If I start this equation on the top, the nice thing about Alex, especially for those of you who know it and those of you who may have sat in other sessions, and that is answering a question correctly once does not mean you understand a topic. Alex is a mastery-based program. You have to answer equations 3 times consecutively. Again, I have a solve button, and if I want to solve this equation, it's going to walk me through this. I will solve it. I'll let the Zoom piece flow down first so I can get to my button. 1 second. And it gives me some positive feedback. It will then give me another iteration. The variables have changed. Sometimes even the words will change on the top of how it's set up. I will solve that equation. You'll notice that I get double credit for that because I answered it 2 times in a row. And if I answer it a 3rd time in a row, I will complete this particular topic. This will basically mean I've learned the topic. I haven't mastered it yet. I have learned it. And what I mean by that is with Alex, after 5 hours of studying, or I should say minimum of 5 hours studying, maximum of 10, the goal is to reach 20 topics. You are going to be receiving a knowledge check. And as long as you answer these equations again in the knowledge check, then it will show mastery and then the pie will expand. Students can also work through the carousel of topics. We never give students topics they're not ready to learn. From left to right are the topics that students are ready to learn in sequence. We never give students topics they're not ready to learn, at least a 94% rate. Now I'm going to get into some of the dialogue that I'm going to talk about here in a minute, and that is, how can you use this in different formats? So in a traditional Alex placement format, students can study on their own how they'd want. But what if you had a bridge program or an intervention program, and you told students, I wanted to make sure this week everyone studies just real numbers. You have the opportunity to do that with your students and do this in a more formal way. And so I want you to think about how that could be impactful if you did have some type of intervention program or bridge program for students, especially if they've been out of the classroom for a while, and you wanted to do it in a more formal manner. You do have the opportunity of doing that, and then make sure that students just study those particular concepts. I'm not gonna go through everything, due to time. I'm gonna come back to here. Students can come back to the homepage. You'll notice, by the way, on this page, we can look at what students have learned, what if they wanna go through reviewing of things that they've studied, they always have the opportunity to review. There are reports, a message center, a dictionary. They can manage their classes, everything along those lines. I am gonna stop here at this point. That is Alex PPL. It's not just a placement program. It's also being used for learning. And that can be for relearning topics and in some situations, learning for the first time. I'm gonna stop at this point and just ask Emily, are there any questions in the chat that have come up that we can answer?
Hey, Rich, no chat questions at this point, but folks feel free to use the chat option. And we definitely have time to address. So we have a pretty small group. So if you do want to raise your hand, I'd be happy to take you off of mute and we can make it more interactive. Mm-hmm. We did have a question come through. Can you set the PPL for any courses? So I think the question is about, you know, which math courses PPL can give insight into students' readiness for.
Absolutely. So by the way, I just flipped screens. I'm back on the administrative side of the site. I am going to go to, because by the way, this question can go in different areas. One of the things that I will tell you is if you wanted to view information at the individual student level, you can. But let's say you had a course, like a bridge program, and you said, I am going to have this course for all of my students that are basically, I'm just going to stereotype this, an intermediate algebra student because they're in prep for college algebra. And if you wanted to learn more about those particular students, you could. You can click on Prep for College Algebra. And by the way, you can do this at the individual student level or in aggregate. I'm going to look at the learning pie and I'm going to pull up more information on these students. By the way, I'm going to answer this question in another way here in a second. This pie shows how my students, what they know, how they're progressing, and still in a grade, what they need to know, what they still need to learn. We can bring this down and we can review this on each individual section of the pie. But if you wanted to dig in deeper, like let's say you wanted to look at exponents and polynomials, you could. Well, this is a great example here. Product rule with negative exponents. 48% of the students know it. 52 still have it remaining and 14% are ready to learn it. There's a difference between remaining to learn it and ready to learn it. By the way, if I click this percentage, it tells me who they are. So to answer your question, you could dig in deeper and evaluate the strengths and weaknesses of students as they come through. If I want to answer this in a different manner though, one second, I'm going to go back to my cohort. Let's say you had a group of students coming in and you said, I want all students to enter into Prep for College Algebra. Upon setting up your account, you have the ability to turn the other modules off. And all students would enter only into that module, which would be preparing them for a college algebra or maybe a liberal arts or statistics course, depending on the course, right? And what the prerequisite would be. Again, we would consult with you on that. I'm hoping that that answered your question on the flexibility of how you may be able to use not only the information, but how you can also set up your program to be used in that manner.
Yeah, they asked also, they followed up specifically asking about college algebra, trigonometry, or statistics. Mm-hmm. So I think, I believe you answered that question. We did
have a comment, and it's actually, it's, you know, when I think about statistics, the prerequisites for going into statistics are different at different schools. We would collaborate with you on making a recommendation of which modules someone should go into based on that course. I'll also say that about trigonometry too. There are some schools I work with where the prerequisites of entering into a trigonometry course is college algebra. And then I have some where college algebra and trigonometry have the same prerequisite of intermediate algebra. And it all depends on how we're covering those topics, but we would make proper recommendations for you.
This is Chow from Hale Washington College. Thank you for letting me speak. My question, you did answer my question. If we do like particular cohorts to get prepared for college algebra or trigonometry. So the other question will be, is there any way we can set up a program? Like, let's say we do 4 weeks boot camp. Then at the end of the boot camp, we might need to decide, okay, this group of students are ready for college algebra, and this group of students may be ready for statistics or trigonometry. So is there any way we can mix them together and eventually they will give us assessment which will tell us, are they ready for that particular course the student are looking for? This is a
great topic, and there's sort of two answers on this. You know, when we're placing a student into a course, although there are specific prerequisite topics we know that many faculty will have, what we'll would want to see in a student entering a course, what I'll say is what we're trying to measure isn't necessarily whether the student understands all of those concepts. What we're trying to do is determine, are they lacking too many prerequisites that would prevent them from being successful entering the course? Now, if you had a student, as an example, in Prep for College Algebra, and you wanted to do an evaluation of individual topics. We've done this in a couple course areas, primarily in calculus, like with engineering students. We've seen a lot of data collected about logs, exponentials, and trigonometry. And so there are some schools, more so in the four-year area, that will evaluate those specific topic areas in addition to our cut scores. Although the cut scores seem to be very strong predictors of their success in the classroom. I'm not saying we can't do that, but it would be a nice research project for us to collaborate with you on doing it. So if at Harold Washington, I know that the city colleges are implementing the program. If you wanted to do that, we'd actually be really excited about it, because we don't have data on that enough, at least at this point, to make all of those decisions.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, yep.
Great, thank you for your session. Yeah, I use Alex in a couple of my courses. I teach at NVCC, Northern Virginia Community College, and use it for pre-calculus. And I'm teaching a hybrid class next semester. And one of the features that I'm very particular about is when I create a test about the time, setting the time for a student, because that's a very important factor in order for a student to do, that's an important factor. And using a different platform, Pearson My Math Lab does have a feature that when you pick different problems, it selects the national average time that student spent on that. But does Alex have anything like that? So like if you pick 25 problems for a placement or for a regular assessment, does it tell you what time is reasonable to put for that test?
You know, as of today, this is a course product. So the product I'm presenting to you today is Alex PPL, but Alex as a course product. It's been a conversation that we've been having internally about wanting to have that capability to provide you. As of today, we don't have that capability, but it is something I know on the development side with our engineers and the math team on the engineering side that they've been looking at putting that together.
But like if I take if I put a PPO for my students, how would I know what time to give them?
Well, if they're taking the assessment, if they're taking the initial assessment, again, in my opinion, this is a low stakes exam. It's not like a classroom product where you're assigning a homework assignment. This is more of an assessment of where their skills are today. And in evaluating that, understanding that the national average is an hour and 17 minutes, you may want to just put this out. My recommendation is normally between 2 to 2.5 hours. Now, there becomes a logistic with that. And that is, there may be some students that need accommodations. And accommodations don't necessarily mean that they're using a screen reader. It's just that they may need some additional time. So I always like to extend it so all students would have the appropriate time to complete it. Now, when using the learning modules, the one thing I'm going to point out is that there are different features and functionalities in our course products that we don't have in PPL. And by the way, vice versa, features and functionalities of PPL that we don't have in our course product. And it was designed in a purposeful manner because they are two different programs. So as of right now, we don't have that capability of assigning a time to an assessment like that, unless you just wanted to put a flat time, understanding the national average.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a great question. I will add that our team is actively researching this, you know, especially as schools have shifted online, and they've, you know, that's also led to a shift in how and why Alex is used. So we are actively researching this, and we'll be sure to communicate sort of any updates. But it is definitely on our minds, and to be able to give a better estimate when you're building an assignment on the side of Alex to help you plan your course better.
Actually, I use three platforms. I use My Math Lab, I use WebAssign, and I use Alex. And My Math Lab is the only one that really have that. And WebAssign has something really weird, which is really bad, because first, I tried to use it and I realized for a problem takes me 2 seconds, like 5 seconds for me to do. And I'm sure it probably takes 30 seconds or a minute for a student. They were giving 5 minutes, And so they have the feature, but it's not good at all. It's not, They did not, the coding was not good, or somehow they came up with it was not good. But so I think that's a feature that it's very much needed that the Pearson is ahead in that.
Sure. So Rich, we had a couple questions come through the chat, and one was in regards to students taking their first placement assessment at home. And the question is, you know, is that an unofficial? And then they take the proctored for an official placement.
That's normally what our recommendation is for schools. These are always institutional policies. My recommendation is not to count the unproctored exam if it's the first exam. But, you know, a question that is a very consistent question for us is, does a student have a study plan within ALEKS for the placement exam? Well, we can't provide a study plan if we don't know what they know and what they don't know. And so taking the first one, taking the first assessment as that practice exam develops the study plan, individualized for every student. There was a research by the Community College Research Center about 2 years ago, and it was talking about why students don't study for their placement exam. And one, I think it was the number two item on there was, most schools, when they provide students a study document, give everyone the same study document. And it may be the even problems from like intermediate algebra. And that's not necessarily related to the student. And so the nice thing about ALEKS is it is individualized, the study plan for the students, which is why we have such a high rate of people using it.
Rich, we had a question about why you recommend letting students choose their own prep and learning module. We have someone here who's currently using PPL. They don't have that setting enabled. They're considering it. So if you could elaborate.
Yeah, so it's a great question. By the way, there's not a right answer to this. I'm going to tell you my answer to this. This is the setup. Automatically assign this or allow students to choose it. Now, the reason that I like to keep this open, as you saw in the demo, even when I kept it open, it said, ALEKS recommends going here. So I'm going to give the, I'm going to act like I would be a traditional student, no different than in your classrooms. What if you told students take the first assessment at home, it doesn't count and the student blows it off? Well, if you automatically assign that prep and learning module to them, they're in a module that is too low for their skill base. Now, what if you have another set of students that come through and they use additional help on the outside, like Wolfram Alpha, or some other type of device that allowed them to use outside help? Well, then they're in a module that's too high for them. So I like to leave it open because ALEKS still makes the recommendation of you belong in this course, or this is where we recommend you go, but you still have an opportunity to choose a different module if you wanted to. Again, there's not a right or wrong answer to it. And I'm gonna even say on our team, we collaborate with the schools to figure out what is the demographics of students coming in. I'll use myself as an example. I took math through differential equations, but it was a very long time ago. 1989 was when I took my last math course. And I'm not ashamed to tell you because it has been that long. When I take my math exams today, I'm somewhere around intermediate algebra to college algebra. Where I can tell you that if I were studying and it gave me prep for college algebra, I probably would remediate and brush up on those topics much quicker going into calculus than someone learning it for the first time. So you need to use your judgment on there, but just understand what the settings look like and think about it from your own perspective.
Great, and Rich, we have one more question I think we'll have time for today. And this is a question we could probably devote an entire session to in the past we have, but Raymond shared with us that at his community college, the VPs have really been pushing to eliminate placement and to use high school GPA. And he agrees, you know, that correct placement is incredibly important for student success. And that with math, the skill loss is going to be greater, right, than some other subjects. So does not agree with the changes. And he wants to know, you know, how do we kind of combat that information that the higher ups are using to push change versus what we know as educators about skill loss and learning loss?
So I know I only have 2 minutes on this, and you're right. I can talk an hour on this particular topic. For anyone who's been following the local research, like especially from MDRC, CAPR, Community College Research Center, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, they published their paper on multiple measures in the SUNY system. And in mathematics, the use of multiple measures of high school GPA, ACT scores, actually did not produce the success rates they wanted to. Second piece that it also showed in that research was that it increased equity gaps. In other words, the white students actually outperformed and had a larger boost than Hispanic and Black students. That's not my interpretation. That's written out directly from the authors. There were differences, by the way, in English and math. We all have to accept that. We have to recognize that. These are two different subject areas. I'm agreeing with you on the math side in your interpretation of this. There's another piece on here, and I've interacted with many faculty on this, and that is the grading policies for students these last, especially this last year, year and a half, is going to be. There were many schools that are just giving pass fail. We don't know actually what the GPA is going to mean. And what if the student's grade in math was a C and they only took 3 math courses in 20 out of 25 math courses during their high school career? And what if their average in mathematics was a C? Well, what does that mean? And what was their last math course? Do they really belong in going to those courses? Anyone who would like to see a copy, again, it's not our paper. It's coming directly from the SUNY research. It came out 3 weeks ago. We'd be happy to send you the link to the CAPR study and MDRC study on what the outcomes were of implementing multiple measures.
I did drop the URL to that study in the chat, but also included in a follow-up note to you.
Yeah, it's a big concern, I think, for everyone, and rightfully so. By the way, the implementation of multiple measures wound up costing the school $140 per student to do. If you look at ALEKS PPL as a program, that also includes learning models, which can be used in your bridge programs. You know, you're talking anywhere from $15 to $25. So a significant reduction. If anyone, I know we're out of time, if anyone would like to contact us for any other information, my email's on here, as is Emily's. We'd be happy to reach out to you and have further conversations about this topic and answer more of your questions.
Thank you, Rich. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for joining our session and for your questions. We look forward to keeping up the conversation with you all. So like Rich said, feel free to drop us a note. We will follow up with the recording and some of these links we referenced. But have a great rest of your afternoon. We hope to see you at some of our later sessions today.
Thank you, guys.
On joining for trivia, the password is Spokane with a lowercase s. So hope to see some of you guys at trivia.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.